All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. There should be sheets. I'm guessing there are additional sheets over here in front. All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome back. We are continuing, Yemir Tzashem, in our journey through Tehillim. So in the couple of weeks before Pesach, we began to focus on Kapitel Tesvav. And now for the couple of weeks until Shavuos, we're going to continue focusing on Kapitel Tesvav. Just to give a little bit of a review. So Kapitel Tesvav, let's take a look. It's number one. Everyone has a sheet? Okay. Mr. Shulman is walking around with sheets if anyone needs. Okay, so Kapitel Tesvav is number one. Mizmor L'David, Hashem Miyagor Ba'ohalecha, Miyishkon Bahar Kochacha. So obviously we're not going to review everything we've done in the past Shurim, but suffice it to say that David HaMelech opens this particular kapitel with a profound and fundamental question. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Miyagor Ba'ohalecha, who will live in your tent, which according to most Mefarshim, it's a little chazor, a little review. Ohalecha refers to what? Okay, that's one of the opinions. Good. All right, Chaya just saved all of you. Good. What was the predominant, the majority opinion? Ohalecha. Think about it. An ohel is what? An ohel as opposed to a bayis. A bayis, a home, is what? It's permanent. An ohel, impermanent. Therefore, the ohel refers to?
This life.
This world. Very good. Olam hazeh. Olam hazeh. Hashem mi yagur ba'ohalecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what is the recipe? What is the key to successful living? That's in this world. And furthermore, Miyishkon Bahar Kodshecha. Who will remember even the word Yagur versus Yishkon? Yagur, ger, stranger, temporary, Yishkon, Shachan, permanent dwelling, a reference to Olam Haba, the world to come. So David HaMelech is asking two profound questions. A, how do I go ahead and live successfully in this world? And once my... You know, the amazing part about Judaism is that we believe in Olam Haba. We believe in Olam Haba. But here's the amazing part is, we don't live for Olam Haba. We don't live for the world to come. Olam Haba is something that occurs after we die. We don't look forward to Olam Haba, right? We are not a death-centric religion. I think I've quoted this before. Rav Shem Shnofel Hirsch brings down that it's quite fascinating that the Kohanim, who are supposed to be the spiritual leaders of the Jewish people, are not permitted to become Tnei Meis. They're not permitted to come in contact with the corpse, right? Okay, with the exceptions of their immediate family, but yet we know that the Kohen Gadol, right, the high priest, is not permitted to become Tamei for anyone. So first of all, actually, we just had in last week's parasha, right? So Aaron HaKohen loses his two sons, Avnadav and Avihu, and he is not even permitted to leave the confines of the Mishkan to become Tamei for them. It's something that I think is, for many of us, I'll speak for myself, is very difficult to comprehend. This idea that even when a person experiences such personal, intimate loss, that the Kohen Gadol is not permitted to stop what he's doing. He has to continue, and he still goes on with his responsibility. Now, the truth is, we know that we look at caring, at dealing with the dead, as caring for the dead, as a chesed shel emes. It is the epitome, it is the pinnacle of pious behavior, of selfless behavior. And yet, the Kohanim, who are supposed to be our spiritual role models, are not permitted to come in contact with the dead. Seems to be an inherent contradiction. So Shem Shnofel Hirsch explains, it's not a contradiction at all. Kodesh Baruch Hu is trying to highlight for us that we are not a death-centric religion. There are certain religions where the goal is get through this life as quickly as possible, because this life is terrible, and the only good that you'll ultimately find in your existence is in your, whatever you will call it, your world to come, your paradise. Now, we believe there's something beautiful waiting for each of us, but we are in no hurry to get there, because the ultimate essence of life is what we do in this world. The next world is when we get to reap the dividends of what we did, or what we didn't do. But ultimately, the essence, so therefore says Rav Hirsch, HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely wants to create a massive division between spiritual life and death. We don't want you to see the Kohanim in the venue of death, because we want to highlight the fact that Judaism places an incredible importance and focus on life. And this is so exceptionally important. That's why, interestingly enough, how much does the Torah speak about Olam Haba? There's maybe one veiled reference to it. I mean, the truth is, same reason why. How many times does the Torah speak about Mashiach? One veiled reference to it in the brachos of Yaakov, when he gives a bracha to Yehuda, where he says, "Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda umechokek mi bein raglav ad ki yavo shilo." Who's Shilo? Okay, so a whole dispute among the Mefarshim, but some understand it to be the Mashiach. So it's amazing, though. Isn't it amazing that here we live our whole lives with the promise of an afterlife? We live our entire lives in eager anticipation for the Melech HaMashiach, right? Two important foundation stones of our faith, and yet ask the common person, excuse me, what can you tell me about Mashiach? And what will they tell you? Right? He's going to come, and it's going to be great. Can you be a little bit more specific? Not really. Right? What can you tell about Olam Haba? What can you tell me? It's beautiful, and we all have a portion. Can you be any more specific? A little bit here, a little bit there, but nothing. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in His infinite wisdom, does not want us to be focused on things down the road, to the exclusion of everything else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to put the bulk of our energy into today. That's what God wants us to focus. The danger of messianic fixation, the danger of world to come fixation, is that a person puts all of their efforts into that unknown future and totally cheapens, demeans, and diminishes the value of the day. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do you think? God doesn't know the details? Of course God knows the details. He purposely omitted them because that's not what He wants us focusing on. He wants us to say, okay, it's Wednesday. What magnificent feat. What incredible accomplishment. How am I going to fundamentally change and better myself and potentially the world around me today? That is the most important thing. Mashiach, believe in Him, He's going to come, it's going to be wonderful. Olam Haba, it's going to be spectacular, it's going to be enormous. I can wait. But you understand. So David HaMelech is asking over here, Mizmor LeDavid, it's not an accident as to the order. Mi Yagur Ba'ohalecha. First question is, how do I live successfully in this world? Mi Yishkon Bahar Kodshecha. But ultimately, life is all about a balance of planning. Right? So the truth is, we want to live in the present, but we can't ignore the fact that there will be a future. So how do I live a successful life in this world that ultimately will translate to a meaningful Olam Haba? So we've focused on so far really only the first one, which is Holech Tamim. So in one of our shiurim, we looked at the entire first pasuk as a progression. Holech Tamim, Fo'al Tzedek, Dover Emes Bilvavo. So we understood, like Rav Hirsch explained in his commentary on Tehillim, that it could refer to bettering oneself, bettering one's interpersonal relationships, and ultimately being good with God. So David HaMelech, in this opening sentence, is saying a person has to be true to themselves, true to their fellow, true to their creator. That's the recipe for successful living. But then we began to break apart these particular phrases. Really, it's not our idea. The Gemara actually does that. And we began to see that in each of these particular called attributes or traits, there's an entire fundamental Torah attached to it. So we spoke about, we spent time on Holech Tamim. What I'd like to focus on this morning is Fo'el Tzedek. Fo'el Tzedek. So if you look in the English translation, we use the translation of works righteousness. Works righteousness. So there are a couple of different opinions in terms of what exactly this means. So if you take a look at number 2, the Eben Ezra writes, Po'el Tzedek, Im Chaverov. What is Im Chaverov means what? With your friends. So therefore, according to the Eben Ezra, Po'el Tzedek means what? So it could be on a global level, like Rav Hirsch wanted to suggest, a justice system. A justice system. Right? We know, even the Mishnah Avos tells us that you need certain pillars in order for society, for the world to exist. You need din. You need justice. So maybe Holech Tamim is fine. It's very nice if you're a good person. But Paul said that you need justice. Good. So that could be globally. What else could it mean? Im Chaver. What else could that mean? With your friends. So what could be referring to? You know, there's an interesting dichotomy that we often live with, which is that sometimes we assume that I can be a tzaddik, I can be righteous, and the way I interact with the world doesn't really matter all that much. I can preserve my personal piety even if I'm not the nicest person to those around me. So what's interesting over here is that David HaMelech is saying is, in order to be a holich tamim, if you want to be a complete person, and let's just go with the most basic definition of complete as we saw it in past shiurim, that holich tamim just simply means a person who tries to do that which is good in life, you can't live, you can't be spiritually schizophrenic. A person can't go ahead and be a certain way to themselves, but act a different way to the world around them. A person has to present a comprehensive image of goodness. You know, I'll tell you, although it's not a widely popular thing, one of the things that drives me a little bit crazy is when you find that people have a double standard as to how they deal with Jews and non-Jews. Right? So meaning, if I go to a Jewish store and they give me too much change, so of course, Shabbos Avida, I have to give it back. But if I go to another store, Shoppers, thank you, I don't get out much, right? Shoppers, right? So I go to Shoppers and, it's a guy. Let me just tell you something very important you should know. People, leaving aside the halacha of it, people who treat Goyim in a certain way will ultimately treat Jews in the same way also. If you take liberties with people, we're not like that. So if you say, okay, I treat Goyim like this, I treat Jews like this, I treat Latinos like this, I treat blacks like this, it doesn't work that way. Ultimately, our behavior usually comes down to the lowest common denominator. So the way you treat the lowest people in your life ultimately will spill over to the way you treat all people in your life. Now again, does the halacha make differentiations in the way we treat Jews and non-Jews? Of course. But we're talking more just right now on an interpersonal level. Just how does one conduct themselves in general with the community of mankind around them? We do not believe that all people are the same. We do not believe we have to look out for our own. We have to know there's a certain, the Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha is dafka a mitzvah that applies between Jews. But that being said, I believe what the Eben Ezra is saying over here is Paul Tzedek. A person has to create a particular high level of code of conduct for everyone around them. Because if you think you're just going to be good to a certain segment and treat another segment not well, just David HaMelech is telling us that will spill over into the way you treat all people. Yes? Look, the truth is, this is the difficulty of living in Golos. One of the great challenges we have is, you're right, that balance between appropriate interpersonal conduct versus, you know, engaging in chanif, I don't know what the good English word for, you know, unbased flattery. Just flattery for no reason. You're right, that's the balance. That's a difference here. The truth is, the etiquette between Jew and non-Jew is a whole... Maybe when we finish Tehillim in about 10 years, we could go ahead and we'll start that series. But the idea, just on the basic level, of Poel Tzedek in Chaveirav. In Chaveirav, see, Eben Ezra says, it just means being a good person. Know how to be a mensch. Know how to act. Know how to behave. You could be the greatest holich tamim. You could possess the greatest amount of personal piety. But at the end of the day, if your piety does not influence and shape and color your interactions, then the piety is deficient. That's the Eben Ezra. The Al-Sheikh, in number 3, takes a different approach. The Al-Sheikh writes, number 3, Kibasosa pa'ulama. So the Al-Sheikh says like this. You know what Paul Tzedek means? When you do anything in life, lo techaveh shum pinia, ki az tihya poel tzedek. So let's look at these words again. Kibasosa pulama. When you do anything in life, lo sechavin shum pinia. What does that mean? Lo sechavin shum pinia. Don't have. We'll call it self-interest, self-motivations. Pinia means what?
An agenda.
right? Pinya means almost like a kivun, like a direction, like an agenda, an agenda. So what is the Alshich saying? Something amazing. That in life, if you want to be a Paul Tzedek, do things for the right reasons. Do things for their appropriate reasons and not for some degree not because of some personal agenda or some other motivation. Now, I would venture to say that this is probably one of the hardest things in life. Because the truth is, no person is fully altruistic. Because remember, ultimately, let's say a person does an incredible amount of chesed. So the truth is, even if you speak to people who are very engaged in chesed, why do a lot of people do chesed? It makes them feel good. Well, the truth is, that's not the reason we do chesed, to make us feel good. But the truth is, for many people, that is the motivation. Is that a bad thing? No. If at the end of the day, it gets you to do the right things. You know, sometimes, even unholy motivation could serve very holy purposes. Holy purposes. Why? Because if unholy motivations get you to do good things, and those good things are objectively good things, then the unholy motivations suddenly are a little less unholy. Yes? It could be something more sinister like that. Although, I think what the Alshich is ultimately saying is he's taking it a higher level. I think it's understood that a person should never do something for sinister motives. Right? That's for sure. I think what the Alshich is trying to bring out is, here's how I understand the Alshich. If you read the words, he says, don't do things for ulterior motives. Don't do things with some kind of agenda. So why is it difficult to accept the fact that it may actually mean that? Why would it be difficult to accept the fact that I may actually mean that? If you go with the Alshich, that ultimately it means the straight reading. Lo sechavin shum pniya. Don't do things with any kind of personal agenda or motivation. What's the difficulty with translating it that way? I'm sorry? Right, because it would seem to be impossible. Meaning, is there really one person that could honestly say that they do things for 1,000% altruistic reasons, for not going ahead? You know, it's interesting. The Sefer HaChinuch brings, actually, Rav Hirsch brings down this idea. He says, he has a whole theme about this, that people do the majority of things in life for their own motivations. He says, even something as simple, or not so simple, as he says, having children. He says, why do people have children? Right? So the truth is, because Rav Hirsch writes, every person wants a little bit of immortality. So he says, at the end of the day, what does a child give you? A child gives you, hopefully, an assurance that even when you are no longer here, a piece of you will live on. And Rav Hirsch explains that many of the things we do for our children is in order to ensure our immortality. Rav Hirsch says something amazing. That's why you see many parents who make the fatal parental flaw of trying to make their children in their own image. Right? Where is that? Why? Why is there that natural inclination that almost every parent has? And this is the great challenge of parenting, to try to figure out ultimately what makes your child special, not what you want to see in your child. It's a very tenuous balance. So where does that come from? So Hirsch says, because every parent, somewhere deep down, does want their child to be in their image, because ultimately that reinforces the notion of their immortality. If I see a little me running around, that's why parents take such pride. When what? When their children look like that. Right? Why is there such pride? And there are some people who are nothing to write home about, right? And they're still very happy, right? Samamish. So why such simcha? Why such simcha? Because there's a little me. There's a little me. There's a little something that looks like me that is going to, Emir Hashem, outlive me. So my immortality, at least some degree of it, has been locked in. So to say that the Alshich is telling us that we should do things without any personal agenda, I think is a very difficult sell. I think it would be difficult to imagine that the Alshich is telling us to do something that flies in the face of the most basic cornerstone of human behavior. But perhaps what the Alshich is telling us is the following. to be self-aware. To be self-aware. That one of the most important things in life is to know why I do the things I do. You know, we see this all the time. You see this especially in people who seem to get upset about seemingly trivial things, or people who seem to have exaggerated reactions to things that don't seem to warrant this type of reaction. And if you're the, if you bear the brunt of their angst and their anger, you scratch it and you say to yourself, what? What's really happening in that person's life, right? So Reuven or Shimon or Leah, they think they're getting upset about A, but they're not really getting upset about A because A doesn't deserve this level of reaction. There must be something else going on. They must be upset about B, C, D, or something. What is it? So the Al-Sheikh is saying is, Holech Tamim means, not a person who's able to divest themselves of all motivations. Paul said, excuse me. Because ultimately, who can do that? And maybe there are, I'm sure there are great people who can do that. But for most of us regular people, to go ahead and divest ourselves of any personal agenda is exceptionally difficult. But you know what we can do? We can at least be aware when the agenda is at play. That at least when we do things in life, to know why we're... So if I'm the person who does chesed, and I know the reason I do this chesed is because it makes me feel good, so I should at least be aware that that's why I'm doing it. Because at least if I know that, then I know maybe, you know what, I have to aspire to more noble intentions. I have to aspire to a higher form of chesed, but at least I'm aware as to what my motivation is. I know that it's not totally perfect, but I'm aware. I'm self-aware. This... The truth is, we can make this whole shiur about self-awareness because it is one of the everything is a dominant theme in Judaism. We don't have secondary themes. Everything is a but this idea of self-awareness, da es atzmicha, to ultimately a person has to know who and what they are. What makes me tick? What makes me do the things that I do? What makes me say the things that I say? It doesn't mean that I could correct all of those things, because we all have our personal challenges. But at least if I'm aware as to why I do the things that I do, I have a handle on my life. And if I'm aware of what makes me tick, if some of those things aren't so great, at least I've identified the particular areas that require some level of attention and perhaps some levels of repair. As opposed to a person who goes through life totally unaware, with a lack of self-awareness, the person, we see this unfortunately all the time, a person never really has the chance to grow if they don't actually understand what it is that makes them tick. So it could be, now by the way, it could be that the Al-Sheikh just means what he says. And maybe I'm a very flawed and imperfect person, so maybe I just can't accept the Al-Sheikh at face level. It would seem to be difficult that that's what he's advancing. And I think ultimately what he's really trying to tell us is, if there is an agenda, just be aware of it. So we have the Ibn Ezra, who tells us Paul Tzedek means interpersonal. Very nice to be a holich tamim. Very nice to be personally pious. But make sure your personal piety spills over into your interpersonal relationships. Al-Sheikh, not don't have an agenda, but if you have an agenda, if you have some self-serving reasons, if you know ultimately that you do things not for purely altruistic reasons, have enough self-awareness to know what makes you do the things you do. Then we come to an interesting Gemara. And with this we'll spend the remainder of our time. So the Gemara Maseches Makos takes this opening phrase of Tehillim and dissects it, like we're doing over here. So when the Gemara gets to the phrase Poel Tzedek, and again we'll just use this word, works righteousness. So the Gemara says three words: Kigon Abba Chilkiyahu, like Abba Chilkiyahu. And the Gemara stops there. Not much help for us, except that there's another Gemara that speaks about Abba Chilkiyahu. Now, to appreciate this Gemara, so many of you may be familiar with the story of Choni HaMa'agel. Right? So who was Choni HaMa'agel? Literally, Choni the circle drawer. Why was he called Choni the circle drawer? Good. Because there was one episode where he was known for his incredible koach hatzilah, his incredible power of prayer. There was a severe drought in Eretz Yisrael. Choni, right in the beginning, he was just Choni. He was plain old Choni. So they came to him to daven on behalf for rain. Choni went ahead and began to rain. His tefillos weren't answered. The Gemara then relates he drew a circle around himself, and literally he threatened HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, God, I am not moving out of this circle until you bring rain. Now, by the way, don't try that at home. I don't mean the circle. I mean threatening God. There are a couple of people who have done it, right? Like Moshe Rabbeinu did it. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu did it. And Choliam Agel. There are a couple other people who did it. It speaks to a very close and intimate relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is hard for us to imagine. But that's what he does. And the Gemara relates the whole story of how ultimately he got rain. And then there's another whole parsha, a whole other story of Choliam Agel, where he falls asleep for an extended period of time. The reason I'm telling you this is because Choni's son is Abba Chilkiah. Abba Chilkiah is the son of Choni HaMa'agel. Okay. Grandson, excuse me, Barbara, excuse me. So if you take a look at number 5, and you could see, I put the English over here as well, so you could see it, you could follow it in either one. So the Gemara says the following, Abba Chilkiah, Barbara de Choni HaMa'agel. It's a little bit of a long Gemara, but you're going to see it, it's actually quite fascinating. So Choni HaMa'agel is, excuse me, Abba Chilkiah is the grandson of Choni HaMa'agel. V'chimitztirich alma l'mitra, havimishaji rabbanan l'gabei ubay rachami. When the world required rain, now whether Alma ultimately means world, or Alma might mean Eretz Yisrael. You know, the Ramban points out something amazing, that all brachos that come to this world come through Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael then showers it upon the rest of the globe. So if you could imagine, there's like a divine funnel that takes blessings from above, funnels it down to Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael disperses it to the rest of the world. So whether Alma here means Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't matter. The point is they needed rain. So they went to Abba Chilkiah and davened for them, and ultimately rain fell. Okay, so that was the first time. Zimna chada itztarich Alma l'mitra. There was another time that the world required rain. Shadir Rabbanon zugad Rabbanon l'gabei l'miboy rachami d'nei se mitra. And the rabbis dispatched two Rabbanim to go and ask Abba Chilkiah to daven for rain. They went ahead and they went to Abba Chilkiah's house, but they couldn't find him. Then they went out to the field, and what? And he was farming, he was hoeing. Just, you have to appreciate this. Here is a man who is so holy that they go to him to daven to God for rain, right? And he gets results, right? It's not the pshat like he has like 33% accuracy. You know, he davens for rain and he gets results. And amazingly enough, what is he doing? He's a farmer. Okay, so they found him farming. Yehovu le shalma v'lo azbur le ape. Here's what's interesting. They said shalom aleichem tim to Abba Chilkiah, and he didn't respond. Bifanya ki hava mankit tzivi, dora tzivi umara bechad kasva, uklima bechad kasva. So apparently they caught him during his workday. So they waited for him to finish work. He was a paid laborer. Like, you imagine being Abba Chilkiah's employer, right? Imagine being Abba Chilkiah's boss, okay? But he finished the day, and at the end of the day, he collected some wood. He put his wood and his hoe and his shovel on his one shoulder and his cloak on his other shoulder. Kula urcha lo sayim asay. So just follow this. The Gemara is going to speak about the behaviors of Abba Chilkiah throughout this story. So during the whole trip, Abba Chilkiah did not wear his shoes. So while he didn't wear his shoes, he held his shoes. Ki mata lemaya sayim asay. When he got to the river, he then put on his shoes. Ki mata lehizmi vehigi dilanu lemane. When he approached thorn bushes, he lifted up his tunic. Okay. Ki mata limbasa, nafka divisu la'ape ki mekashta. When he came into the city, his wife came out to greet him, and she was all mekashta, bedecked, right? She was wearing beautiful clothing with beautiful jewelry. Okay. Ki mata levese, when he came into his home, all divisu bereisha, he let his wife walk in first, v'hadar ayil iyu, and he went in after his wife. V'hadr ayli rabbanon, and only afterwards did he allow his two rabbinic visitors to come in. Yosef v'karich rifta, he sat down and ate bread. Right, they were eating dinner. V'lo amrluhu rabbanon tukruhu, and he did not invite the rabbis to share of the bread. Palag rifta liyanuki, he broke bread for the children. Likashisha chada ulazutra tre, to the older child he gave one loaf or one piece, and to the younger one he gave two. Amr la lidvisu, At this point in time, the Gemara says, he leaned over, he whispered to his wife the following. Yadana dirabanan mishum mitra ka'asa. Now remember, until this point in the time, Abba Chilkiah has not said a word to his two rabbinic visitors. See, he leans over and whispers to his wife, I know that they're here to ask me to daven for rain. Nesik le'igra v'ni boy rachame. Let's go up, you and I, to the attic, and we'll daven. So interestingly enough, as much as they came for Abba Chilkiah and not Mrs. Abba Chilkiah, apparently she was a very important part of his tefillos. So he says to his wife, let's excuse ourselves for a moment, let's go up to the attic, and we'll daven for rain. Their idea was, well, you'll see what their idea was. Efshar, demeratzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yesei mitra. Maybe God will listen to our prayers and he'll bring us the rain. Velo nachzik tivusa l'nafshin. And they will not, these rabbis will not attribute the positive results to us. Meaning, what is Abba Chilkiah trying to avoid? Abba Chilkiah does not want to get credit for bringing the rain. Even though it's going to be him who brings the rain, he doesn't want credit. So he says to his wife, you know what, let's excuse ourselves for a couple of moments. We'll go up to the attic. We'll daven. Remember, the rabbis never asked Abba Chilkiah for anything. We'll come back to the table. Hopefully, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will hear our tefillah, so we'll already bring the rain. And then our rabbinic visitors will ask us, well, I'll ask them, what do you need? They'll tell us what? We need rain. Abba Chilkiah will say, oh, do you hear that? Right? Look, Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered you without me. Soku le'igro, they went up to the attic. Kam ihu bechada zivusa. Zovisa. Vi'i bechada zivisa. So the ishtavin in their own corner. Almost, conjuring up the image of Yitzchak and Rivka. They each daven in their own corner. This is what the Gemara says. Kadim saluk anone mehach zuvisa didevisu. The rain clouds came first from his wife's directions, then from his, which would seem to indicate that her tefillos were answered first. Ki nochis, when they now, Mr. and Mrs. Abba Chilkiah come down, Amar Lehu, he says to his guests, Amai Asu Rabbanon, right? Why are you here? Why did you two distinguished rabbis come to visit us? Amar Lehu, Shadri Lan Rabbanon Legabe Demar, Lemi Boy Rachami Amitra. We've been dispatched by the other rabbis to ask you, Abba Chilkiah, to daven for rain. Amar Lehu, Baruch Hamakum Shlo Hitzrich Eschem LaAbba Chilkiah. So apparently at this point in time it already began to rain. So Abba Chilkiah said, oh, Baruch Hashem, that God answered your tefillos without ever having to rely on Abba Chilkiah. His visitors are not fooled. Amrule Yadinan de Mitra Machmas Marhu de Asa. So we know, Abba Chilkiah, that the rain came because of you. So then I said, you know what? So now that we got the rain thing out of the way, could we ask you a couple of questions about your behaviors that we observed over the course of the day? Meaning, it's a nice way of saying, for someone so great, you strike us as quite strange. Right? There are a number of things you did throughout the day that just seem totally enigmatic. Elalema lan mar hani mili dimetamelis. Listen to this. You can imagine they're keeping their notes throughout the entire day. Here are the questions that we have based on what we observed of your behavior. Number one, my taima ki yahavina lemar shalma lo azban la mar apay. Why is it that when we showed up during the day and we said Shalom Aleichem to you, you didn't even what? You didn't even answer. Right? How can you not? If somebody gives you Shalom, how can you not answer? Amar Lehu, listen to this. Schir Yom Havoy, V'amina Lo Ifkar. So Abba Chilkiah said, you don't understand. I am an hourly laborer. Can you imagine this? Abba Chilkiah. Right? Abba Chilkiah says, look, I'm an hourly laborer. And therefore what? If I am on the clock, my time belongs to my employer. It does not belong to you, so I have no right to give you Shalom Aleichem on my employer's time. Umay taima, dara mar tzivi achar kasvei, uglima achar kasvei. They asked him the next thing. Why is it that when at the end of the day when you were carrying your stuff home, you put the wood on one shoulder, right? The wood in your hoe on one shoulder, and your cloak on another shoulder. Wouldn't it make more sense to put the wood where? On top of the cloak, right? After all, again, the cloak, the wood will brush against yours. I don't know how far he lived from where he worked, but the point is carrying that wood on your shoulder leaves you open to getting caught, to abrasions. Listen to this. Amar Lehu, talis shu'ula isa. It's not my cloak. I don't own it. It's a borrowed piece of clothing. Lahachi shali, ulahachi lo shali. I borrowed it for the sake of wearing, I did not borrow it to serve as a buffer between my body and the wood. My time akula archa lo sayim mar masane. Why is it the whole way you did not wear your shoes? Meaning, it would normally seem just the opposite, right? The person who wears their shoes on the ground, when you get to the water, you take them off and carry them across. So listen to this. Amar lahu, kula orcha chazina. I don't need to wear the shoes on land, because on land, I could see exactly where I'm walking. So if there's some kind of obstacle, there's some kind of impediment, some kind of hurdle, I can navigate right around it. B'mayah, however, when it comes to the water, lo chazina. Ultimately, I can't see in the water. And therefore, he wears his shoes to prevent himself from stepping on anything sharp. Next. My time of kimata mar lehizmi vihigi, dalinhu lemane. Why is that we got to the thorn bushes? You lifted up your tunic. Now, obviously, you understand, by lifting up his tunic, what did he do? He exposed his legs. By exposing his legs to the thorns, ultimately, he got caught. He got caught. So why did you go ahead and lift up your tunic, allowing your legs to get caught, let the clothing serve as a buffer? Look what he says. Amar lahu, zeh ma'ala arucha, v'zeh eina ma'ala arucha. Literally, this one will regenerate, this one will not. If my leg gets cut, it'll heal. If my clothing gets ripped, it's done. My taima kimata mar lamasa. Nafka devisu demar kimakashta. So this is also interesting. Why is it that when you came into the city, Mrs. Abba Chilkia came out to greet you all beautifully dressed and adorned with her jewelry? Amar lahu, kidei shelo etein einai b'isha acheres. In order that I should not look at other women. Order that I should not look. She made herself look beautiful for me, so that I should not have a desire to look at other women. My taima, I lehi bereisha, v'hadr ayo mara basra. Why is it that you let your wife go in first? You had your wife go in first into the house, and ultimately you followed afterwards and only had us third? So the Gemara says, Amar lahu, mishum delo badiktuli. Now, by the way, the reason the Gemara asks that is because, according to certain approaches in the Gemara, so a man shouldn't walk behind a woman, even if that woman happens to be his own wife, out of a lack of tznius. So they're wondering, Abichilkia, you know, here, not only did you go in after, you had us go in after your wife, so what's the pshat? So he says the following, he says, Amar lahu mishum delo bat kisuli. I don't know you. I don't know you, he says to the Rabbanon. I don't know who you are. So the truth is, I'm not going to leave you alone with my wife. So I had my wife go into the house first to assure her safety, because again, you look like good guys, but I don't know you from Adam. And if I'm not going to leave her outside here with you, even for a moment. My taima, kikarech ma rifta. So they asked him, Avachilkia, why is it that when you sat down for dinner and you broke bread, you didn't offer us anything? Right? Strange. We're sitting at you, they didn't offer us anything. Mishun delo nefishi rifta. He says, because I knew that you already saw that we don't have enough bread. Obviously, you see from this thread that Abba Chilkia must have been terribly destitute. I mean, clearly destitute. So he says, I know that when you said, you already saw that I wouldn't have enough bread to feed my family and to feed you. So I knew already that if I asked you, would you like something, you would have said what? Yes. No, thank you. You would have declined, because a person's not going to take from their host if they realize the host doesn't go ahead and have enough for his own family. And because I knew that you were going to say no thank you, I didn't want to incur false favor by asking you a question that I already knew you were going to answer in the negative. Meaning, so I could have been nice and said to you, would you like some? Even though I knew I couldn't really offer you, you were going to say no. And you would have thought, oh, what a generous person. But I would have incurred that gratitude for no reason. Right, Khanifa would have been false flattery. My time yav mali yinuka kashisha chadarifta ulozutra trei. Why did you only give your older child one piece of bread and the younger one two pieces? Amalu ha koi bevesa v'ha yosa beknishta. My younger child is still in he's in cheder, he's out. Right, so he doesn't eat well during the day. So I need to keep up his strength by giving him a larger dinner. The older child is out; he's home more often, and therefore he has ongoing access to food throughout the day. Umay taima, last question. Umay taima, kadim soluk anane mahach zavisa dahavas kayama devisu demar la anana dide. The last question they asked him is, I guess they must have seen all of this. Why did the rain clouds approach from your wife's direction, before the rain clouds approached from your direction. In other words, why were your wife's prayers answered before yours? Mishum, listen to what he says. The isisa shricha beveisa, because my wife is home more often than I am. What does that mean? V'yava rifta la'anye u'mekarva haniyasa. V'ana yohivna zuza v'lo makarva haniyasa. So listen to this. He said, because my wife was home more often than I, when the poor, I always marvel at this, when people who are destitute speak about the poor. Right? So Abba Chilkiah says, when the poor come to go and knock on my door, she gives them bread. When the poor come to me and ask for something, I give them a dollar. So when she gives them something, she gives them something that is immediately usable and could immediately ameliorate the difficulty of their plight. When I give them something, still what? They have to go to the store, they have to do this, they have to do that. So because she brings instant relief to the poor, whereas I only bring delayed relief to the poor, her tefillos are answered first. Or the Gemara gives another answer. Inami, or the other possibility was, I don't know if it means that Abba Chilkiah gave both of these answers and said it's one of these two things, or there are two different versions of the story, but the Gemara says, Hano ber yoni dahava b'shvivusan, ana bayrachami delemisu, vehi bayrachami delahadru b'tziyufta, v'ahadru. Or because of the episode where there were these bayona, there were these bad people who were making our lives miserable in the neighborhood, real Rishoyim, I davened that they should die. I want that they should die. But my wife told me that I should daven that they should do tshuva. And in fact, they did do tshuva. So because of that, maybe because she had a lot more hope in people than I did, either way, either because she brought immediate relief to the poor, or ultimately, because she believed in people more than I did, her tefillos were answered first. The truth is, we can give a whole shiur on this Gemara by itself, all these different attributes. But remember, let's loop back. Besides being a fascinating Gemara, let's go back to where we started. Remember, this is not a historical shiur on Abba Chilkiah. How do we get to Abba Chilkiah? Right, good. Because if you remember again, going back to number 4, the Gemara in Maseches Makos said, what's an example of Poel Tzedek? Abba Chilkiah. Abba Chilkiah. Now, the Gemara Makos doesn't tell us anything about Abba Chilkiah. We have to go to the Gemara Maseches Tainis to learn about Abba Chilkiah. So what does this mean? So first of all, it could mean based on this Gemara, Poel Tzedek, maybe we're looking too deep. What's a Poel? A worker. Tzedek means righteous. So maybe what David HaMelech is actually saying, says the Gemara, is what? Poel Tzedek means an honest worker. So who's a good example of an honest worker? Abba Chilkiah. How do we say Abba Chilkiah was an example of an honest worker? Well, look, he wouldn't even give Shalom Aleichem back to his two visitors who came to visit him during his work day because he was still on the clock. He wouldn't even use the borrowed cloak to go ahead and buffer between the wood and his skin. Poel Tzedek. So it could be, that's what it means. Like Abba Chilkiah, a trusted, honest worker who never veers from the expectations that are put upon him, like Abba Chilkiah. That's one possibility. I think there's another possibility, which is the following. Poel Tzedek maybe also means someone who lives their life with a sense of correctness. What does that mean? What's our ultimate goal in life? If there was one thing, think about this for just a moment. If there was one behavior or one thing that we could perfect, and I'm not just talking about as individuals, I mean as people in general, what would it be? It's probably not a fair question. Right? I'll tell you what my personal opinion of this is: to think before we act. To think before we act, right? Clinical tests have shown that 9 out of 10 major life mistakes usually come about because people don't appropriately process what they're going to say or what they're going to do before they say it or before they do it. And that's how we get into trouble. Because then once it's said and once it's done, it's very difficult to reverse. Perhaps Poel Tzedek means, Poel doesn't just have to mean worker. What else does Poel mean? Actions. Right? Poel means one who acts. So David HaMelech says, Poel Tzedek. Be one who acts in life with a sense of tzedek. Tzedek, as we'll see, doesn't just have to mean righteousness. But tzedek can also mean what? Correctness. What's the common theme in the Abba Chilkiah story? What does the story show us about Abba Chilkiah?
Right?
He thinks things through. Right? Everything is methodical. How he runs his workday is methodical. How he deals with his cloak is methodical. The lifting up of his tunic. Yes, you would say he's crazy because he's allowing to get his legs cut. But it's methodical. The shoes in the river, methodical. His wife coming out to greet him, methodical. Him letting his wife back in. Everything has a seder. Everything is ordered. Everything is methodical. Says the Gemara, you want to know an example of a poel tzedek? If you want to know an example of someone who lived his life with a seder, with an order, with a well-thought-out direction, Abba Chilkiah. Abba Chilkiah. That's the Gemara saying. So according to this approach, ultimately, what Paul Tzedek perhaps could mean is someone who lives their life, Paul, one who does the things that they have to do in life, Tzedek, with a sense of seichel, with a sense of correctness, with an order, with a seder. So David HaMelech, interestingly enough, if you follow the progression, after extolling holich tamim of personal piety, David HaMelech is now coming along and saying, that's wonderful, personal piety is great, but personal piety must be accompanied by what? By seicheldik living. By seicheldik living. How do you live your life? How do you order the events of your life? How does one order their day? How does one approach the various situations? Does one think things through in advance? Or kind of, you know, do we, as they say, live life by the seat of our pants? You know, how do we order our existence? Paul Tzedek, that's Abba Chilkiah. One other potential approach in this could also mean the following. Let me show you something fascinating over here. The truth is, as an aside, although I don't want to get too much into it, we only have a couple of minutes left, I think another interesting possibility, although, again, I'm just mentioning to you that we're going to move on, another interesting possibility of Paul Tzedek is this idea that you have to keep living with the degree of righteousness that you can accomplish. What does that mean? I think one of the amazing parts of the story is here, Abba Chilkiah is this great tzaddik that everybody turns to. And yet, amazingly enough, in the story, who is really the heroine? It's his wife. Now, the truth is, when other people eclipse us, there are two ways that you can deal with that. Some people become very despondent, because if someone's greater than me, then by definition, I'm not as great as them. And if I'm not as great as them, then it's almost like this feeling of a certain degree of failure. Right? There's also another important thing in parenting. Right? You don't have to be the best. You don't have to be the best. You don't have to be the best in your class. You don't have to be the best in your yeshiva. You don't have to be the best in your community. You have to be the best in accordance with the talents and kohos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. That might put you at the top of your class, and it might put you on the bottom of your class. You know, there's on Shabbos I gave a shir about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You know, so what's amazing is the Gemara said, well, he was part of the shir, wasn't about him, but the Gemara says that Hillel had 80 pairs of students, and the katan shebahem was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Right? The greatest one was Yonasan ben Uziel. Right? So you have to understand that what does that mean? That means that in yeshiva, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the guy who was the bottom of the class. Who was the bottom of the class? The Gemara actually relates that when Hillel became ill, all of his students came in. Now, if there are 80 students, I don't know, I'm sure Hillel was an important man. I don't know how big his bedroom was, but 80 people is a lot of people. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was left standing in the courtyard. Because you got to go into the room of the Rebbe based on your standing. But yet, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, amazing enough, Hillel says, the standing that Gemara is, Hillel says to his students, Ayei ha'av shebachem, where is the father of all of you? And he was referring to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because he said, he is the av l'chokhmah and the av l'doros. He is the father of wisdom and the father for generations. Meaning, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was clearly not the greatest Talmud Chacham amongst his peers. Right? That's why he was ranked as the Katan. But amazingly enough, his Rebbe already saw, who is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Who's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is responsible for saving the Jewish people during the times of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one who was smuggled out of the city, pretended to die. He met Vespasian. He's the one who uttered the words that forever changed our history. Tein di Yavne v'chachamel. He saved the remnant of the Jewish people. So it's amazing how sometimes in life, the ketanim, right, the people whose SAT scores are not as great, right, or the people who can't reach the highest levels in the metrics that we start, or the people who can't perform in the way that conventional society marks performance, sometimes become the greatest people. And I think that's part of the message of this story also, that poel tzedek means keep doing good, even if what? Even if what? Even if you're not the top. Even if there are others who are doing more than you, who are better than you, who are greater than you, because your contribution is important, even if it's not as great, whatever that means. If it's not as great of the contributions as those around you, the little bit that you have to give is, it's amazing. Abichilkia, right? He's the guy who's everybody coming to see. And now you have to realize, you think word's not going to get back in the Beis Medrash? Forget about Abichilkia. Let's buy it. We're going to Mrs. Chilkia next time, right? She's the real literal rainmaker, right? So what are they going to say in the Beis Medrash now? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Okay, my wife is greater than me. Wonderful. Wonderful. Poel tzedek. I have to do what I have to do. I have to keep doing good. I have to keep performing. I have to keep doing it. Even if someone else is going to be greater, I know that I have my tachlis in life. One last approach in the 2 minutes that we have left. There's another interesting use. There's another interesting use of the word tzedek. Right, and the truth is, if you look at number 6, the Gemara Maseches Brachos says that talking about the procedure of a levaya, and the Gemara says that what happens, the end of the second line, v'hu omeid umatzik alav eshadin, matzik alav eshadin. So matzik alav eshadin means what? How do you translate that? Right? Now, what is matzdik? Right? That I accept the righteousness or correctness of God's will. That's what I put over here in number 7. I zirax this for you. We should not know of it, but at a levaya, so a person goes ahead, an ovel, different minhagim. Some circles, everybody at the levaya says it, and other times just the avilim say it. But there's a tefillah called tziduk hadin. Right, which literally now tziduk we normally translate is the justness. Right, it's tziduk hadin. Does it mean that I'm happy with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did? No, I don't have to be happy with it, but I accept the fact that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done is absolutely correct. Right, and in fact, the power of this ultimately is, if you're looking in the Hebrew number 7, the third to last line, Hashem nasan v'Hashem lakach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken, the name of Hashem is blessed. This is Tziduk Hadin. I accept the correctness. So perhaps we could say the following. That maybe Tziduk Hadin, maybe Poel Tzedek means like this. You know, there are a lot of people, especially a person, we're a good people. We're a good people. We're more than a good people. We don't even realize how great we are as a people. And we have an uncanny ability for tziduk hadin. That's what we do. So we accept that no matter how terrible it is, we accept the will, we accept the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's only step one. That's only step one. Meaning, the cognitive recognition and acceptance of the will of God is one part of what we're supposed to do. What's the other part? After I cognitively accept, right, the righteousness of God's decree of what God has done, what's the next step? To continue to live. Now what I have to do is, I have to take that cognitive understanding, and I have to now use it as the fuel to continue moving on in life. And I think that's the pshat in the phrase, poel tzedek. Poel tzedek means what? Tzedek, as we just said, perhaps can mean like tziduk hadin, that a person accepts the judgment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's not just enough to accept the judgment of God. What do I have to do? What do I have to do? I have to be a poel tzedek. I have to take that judgment, and now I have to figure out how to live, how to act, how to do, how to go on with this tzedek that will forever be a piece of my life. When a person has to do tziduk hadin, when a person encounters a loss or a tragedy that forever alters the landscape of one's existence, things never become normal again. Things never become the same again. But the challenge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us is, I know it'll never be the same. I know it'll never be the way you wanted it to be. But now what? I have to become a poel tzedek. I have to become a person who doesn't just cognitively, intellectually accept the tziduk hadin. I have to take that tziduk hadin and I have to turn it into a pu'ula. I now have to figure out how I can live life knowing that this is my new reality. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this in. If you look at number 8, so I'm sure as many of you know, so today is Yom HaZikaron. So today ultimately is the day when we remember the thousands, the tens of thousands of lives that have been lost through those who fought for Israel's various wars, as well as for those who have been victims of terror. As I always say, it doesn't make any difference how you feel about the Medina, whether you like the state of Israel, don't like the state of Israel, you believe it's the beginning of messianic redemption, it doesn't make a difference, because the truth is, whether you're farming on a kibbutz or whether you're learning in the Mir Yeshiva, at the end of the day, we live in a time where all of this is possible. We live in a time where Baruch Hashem, the only obstacle to going to Eretz Yisrael, so think about the times we live in. The only obstacle is what? The price of airfare. That is, do you realize what a privilege it is to live in such a generation where it's not about the British controlling the shores, right? It's not about the Turks. It's not about the Christians. It's not about the Muslims. It's ours. It's ours. And the only difficulty is, how many stopovers am I willing to make, right, in order to ultimately get to Eretz Yisrael within a budget? What a zechus. What a zechus. So whether you go there for Pesach, whether you go there for the summer, or whether you watch the Kotel camp, and you have this zechus to look at the Kotel, you realize what that means. For 2,000 years, Jews, they didn't know what the Kotel looked like. How do you know what the Kotel looked like? You know, maybe you had some image in your head. Maybe somebody sent them a drawing. Now, whenever you want, you can't sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning, wonderful. You can still see the latest minyanim of Shacharis happening. It's an amazing, amazing time that we live in. But we have to realize that that didn't happen by itself. It didn't happen by itself. So many deaths, so many broken families, so many people throughout the ages who have given their lives for the sake that we can have, whether you want to call it Eretz Yisrael, Medinat, whatever title you want to give it, and whatever you feel about it, doesn't make a difference. Because every Jew loves Eretz Yisrael. So look at number 8. I think this is so profound. Rav Shlomo Aviner, who was Rosh Yeshiva of Ataret Kohanim in the Old City, and the Rav of Beit El, says the following. He has an essay about Yom HaZikaron, about remembering those who have fallen. He says, B'menigina aklalit. Hasmecha, yeshnam gam tzlilim atzuvim. His wording is so beautiful. In the beautiful symphony of our people, there are some very sad and tragic chords. Tzlilei kolom shal yechidim shenafu b'melchamos. Bevadai osan hanefashos hatahoros shenifradnu mehen nimtzoos ata b'makom she'im borotzkim shlevan luvim. So he seeks out the idea that ultimately those neshamos that have been taken from us are in a place where now they don't have to contend with any of the difficulties they had to contend with in this world. And he goes on to say so beautifully that we look forward to the day that we'll all be reunited. Look at the second paragraph. He says, Hanoflim matzi'idim osanu, excuse me, od tzad b'derech l'nitzachon b'ma'avak ben alfei ashanim ma'avak shebo b'nei ha'or hochim u'mosifim or v'chesed v'avas b'riyas ba'olam. So Rav Aviner says, what are we supposed to do on Yom HaZikaron? What are we supposed to do? So the truth is, you're supposed to mourn, you're supposed to reflect, you're supposed to think about the sacrifices. I think for us in Galus, we're probably supposed to think about what we are still doing here. We'll leave that for a different shir. But he says, most importantly, what we're supposed to think about is how can we can increase more light into this world. If Yom HaZikaron is the day that we remember all of those who have been taken from us in Israel's various wars and operations, if it's to remember all of those who have been killed through acts of terror, so all of each of those neshamas represent an incredible reservoir of light, of goodness, of holiness. If they're not here, then what are we doing to augment and to amplify our own light to fill the void? Or in other words, what Rav Aviner is saying is that Yom HaZikaron, unfortunately, it's not just Yom HaZikaron, it's every day in our calendar, ultimately, is all about Poel Tzedek. That our approach ultimately is we accept the fact that to have an Eretz Yisrael, to have a Medina, to have a land, to have anything in life, requires incredible sacrifice. And we accept that sacrifice. We do Tzidok HaDin. But it's not enough to accept the sacrifice. We must be ready to do what? To be a Poel Tzedek. To sit and intellectually accept something is fine, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to intellectually ingest and accept, and then to figure out how we are going to be Poel, how we are going to move, how we are going to do. So just to bring everything together, what we end up with are a number of various understandings and definitions of the simple phrase Poel Tzedek. We have the Ibn Ezra told us it's about interpersonal relationships. The Al-Sheikh who told us that it's about self-awareness. That even though no one could do anything without the personal agenda, at least be aware of what your personal agenda actually is. Self-awareness is the most important key in life. The Gemara tells us, Poel Tzedek is just look at Abba Chilkiya. What does it mean, Abba Chilkiya? Either it means literally be in honest labor, like Abba Chilkiya was, or it can mean live your life, Poel Tzedek. Do what you do with a sense of tzedek, a sense of correctness, a sense of order your existence. Make sure you think before you do. Make sure that everything I'm doing in life is correct, is methodical, all is being done in order to advance my life agenda to get to the point I need to get to. Or Poel Tzedek could also mean that even if there are those around you who become greater than you, who eclipse you, don't despair. Do your part. Do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of you. Continue in your own life to do tzedek, even if those around you, and rejoice in the accomplishments of others. Be happy for those who eclipse you, and know that even if those around you become greater than you, your part is no less important. Or lastly, Poel Tzedek ultimately means that sometimes in life we have to do tzedek adin. Sometimes in life we have to accept the difficult judgments and realities of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the cognitive, intellectual acceptance is only one part. The goal ultimately is to take that tzedek adin and to become a Poel Tzedek. The type of people who, no matter how difficult or how profound the tzedek adin may actually be, we continue to be Poelim, we continue to work, we continue to produce, we continue to bring light into the world. All right, we'll stop over here.